This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Wes, we pointed out, we do a thing every Monday, Wide Receiver U, where we get nominations from around the league, from fans, me, you, the staff, everybody else, and we present them on Monday, and normally it could be anywhere from 8 to 15 catches from the weekend. And this past weekend was, I thought, the best collection of catches that we have seen since we've been doing this show, and today's show number 262. And our next guest...
You said we probably could have done one entire list off the Carolina-Wake Forest game.
No doubt. That game had such spectacular plays that we could have done Wide Receiver U just from that game alone. But our next guest, in my opinion, has been deserving of at least a handful of wins. Forget nominations. Wins. And I believe he's only won it one time. And I said from the very first time that we did this segment... was North Carolina, South Carolina weekend to start the season a year ago. And I thought number two in light blue should have won it, and he lost. And I went nuts. I said, this is crazy. This is an outrage. And again, the fans vote. But our next guest makes his debut. And again, another Charlotte guy. I mean, we got a bunch of dudes from Charlotte on the show today. De'Ami Brown joins us. And De'Ami, first of all, it's great having you on the show. But man alive, have you entertained us the last couple of years, and congratulations for that.
Thank you so much.
And you have gotten ripped off, by the way. And I know you're low key in this because hey, it's all about getting wins. But I have come to your defense since last year's opener against South Carolina. I said, man, that is not right. How in the world are the fans voting and not giving number two more awards? But you have been awesome. And your entire collection of wide receivers at that school, and Sam tossing all over the yard. Man, it's got to be fun coming to work on Saturdays, right? You know he's going to get you the football.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Throughout the week, every day through practice, just seeing the ball being caught, you know, it's a visualization before it even happened in the game. So it's just something that we practice.
De'Ami, what's been the look, there's all sorts of different angles we could go here, but – having a guy like Sam Howell, and by the way, another Charlotte guy for that matter, and yourself, Daz, Garrett Walsh, I mean, it gets to a point now Choffrey's on the team, your younger brother. I mean, you guys are slinging it to just about everybody. Is it a fight in the huddle? Hey, now, Sam, over here, get it to me. You know, I mean, what's that like? Is there a bunch of litigation that goes on?
Oh, nah. Not too much that goes on, but it's a whole lot of us that be open. So around that time, just Sam has to choose. You know, so you know, yeah, the quarterback always go through their reads, but at the end of the day, it's somebody that you throw it to, rather it's the running back, Michael Carter, Javonte Williams, Daz, Garrett, you know, Choffrey, whoever's open at the time, whoever he wants to throw the ball to, he could throw it to any one of us.
By the way, you mentioned the running backs. I mean, not like those guys are slouches either, right? I mean, listen, you guys have so many weapons offensively. It's just kind of crazy what you can play with. It's almost as if it's a shame you only have one ball to play with.
All right, yeah. There's only one ball that we could play with, so we have to share it. Whenever the ball comes to him, you know, we make the plays that we need, so can't complain about it. We have some monster backs, Javonte Williams. He's a grown man out there, you know. And then you have Michael Carter, who can pretty much do the same thing, but just more versatile with it.
I want you to take us through. I mean, we see these catches, right? I mean, the one Saturday against Wake Forest is is just bananas. Take us through a great catch. What do we need to know about these catches you're making or any of these other guys? Is there a specific technique? Is there a focus point to this? I mean, what are you thinking? Ball's in the air going down the field. You know the guy's in your pocket. You know he's going to battle you. For people who don't think there's contact, they're crazy. There's a ton of contact. So what's the key elements for you in making one of these great catches?
Well, for me, I was always taught see ball, get ball. And that's something that I do, so you have to attack the ball. And then right after that is just the concentration of it. You know, you have to see the ball the whole way. because sometimes if you take your eyes off the ball, you can miss it. So see ball, get ball, attack, and then concentrate.
Hey, let's be honest. That was a pick. The poor folks there at Winston-Salem are still going, they're going, hey, come on, man. That was a pick. You stole that one on Saturday. Yeah, I mean, listen, you've made some great catches, and I watched that replay 20 times. I'm like, how in the world did it end up in your hands?
And that's crazy because I said the same thing because he had the ball. He had the ball the whole time. He jumped up, got the ball. He was over top of me, but my arm was still there on his body. And when he brought the ball down, I just snatched it.
Yep. First down, Tar Heels. That's all I know. First down, Carolina. That's all I know at the end of the play.
All right. But let me go back to this. Did you know? I mean, is that of all the catches you've had, is that the biggest theft of one that probably wasn't for you that you ultimately ended up with? Or is there one that is your favorite of all the ones you've had?
That'll definitely be the one that I think I wasn't supposed to have. But it'll be marked down as one of my favorite catches so far this season, or pretty much over the last 2 years, just because of how it happened. Mm.
All right, I'm going to put you on the spot. And this is probably not fair on my behalf. But, again, with all the weapons on this team, who's got the best hands?
Me, most definitely me.
I like that. I like it.
I have to put myself in front of them. It's me. That's something I have to do. I have to put myself first.
I love it. You know what? Wide receivers, you know, I've always heard this in multiple teams. You know, these wide receivers now, these are different cats. These guys want the ball. And so if you didn't answer it that way, I would have been disappointed.
Oh, yeah, there's no other way to answer it. If you don't think you had the best hands on the team, now, I don't know what to tell you.
Yep. You're right. Mm.
Dayami, if we had to ask you about Sam and just kind of the difference from 1 year to the next, I mean, he's been on with us and talked about, you know, losing a few pounds, getting stronger, understanding Coach Longo's offensive packaging a little better, those type things. You know, maybe, you know, if he sees receivers covered, check it down to a running back, things like that. Where do you think Sam's taking the biggest jump from freshman to sophomore season?
I pretty much is reading the defense. As he said, you know, he slimmed down, he toned up a little bit more just so he can run, but he's been able to read the defense a little bit more. This offseason and still during the season, he still puts in the extra hours just to go watch film. He pretty much watched NFL defenses. He watched any defense for any team in the Power Five. So he put in that time just to watch defenses, different coverages, shifts, moves, anything that he – so just so he can understand the game a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, what's it about Mac Brown that has really transformed this team literally overnight from a program that had peaks and then valleys, but now you guys are winning on a consistent level? What is it about Mac Brown that makes him special?
He believes in us a little bit more than you think. He cares about us the most. He put more effort into us than anything. So just winning, we'll give more effort to him too as well. So together as a group, we come collectively and we play for each other. He pushes us every day. We do all scenario things. So you know how we finish in the fourth quarter. We practice fourth quarter every day. That's something that we stand on and practice. We have a fourth quarter, so we put the fours up. But just him believing in us and pushing us every day, making sure that we're on our toes, is just unbelievable.
All right, Dayami, I'm going to jump to a conclusion on this, and you tell me if I'm right or wrong, okay? Coach Galloway handles all the receivers, right? That's Coach Galloway,
all right.
Correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, I know coaching in the defensive backfield is one of the all-time great trash talkers of all time in Dre Bly, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So, has it ever occurred where all of a sudden you wide receivers will start going through a drill and all of a sudden Dre Bly pops up on the other side saying, you can't make it on me? Does Dre Bly ever step in and say, all right, let's see what this is about now, right?
Nah, he ain't never jumped in the drill, but I know after a couple one-on-ones, he'll come over and tell us. He said, if that was me out there, you wouldn't be able to do nothing. And he'll tell us right to our face, oh, sometimes during the drill. Sometimes during the drill. He calling it out. He say, I'm winning. I'm winning. I'm going to win this one. He'll call it out for us.
Hey, you know what? Let me tell you something. He wants no piece of you dudes now. I no disrespect.
He wants no piece of it.
He was great in his day, but it is a different animal now. I'm just telling you. You guys, he wants no piece. I mean, he could run his mouth all he wants, but he has no intention of getting in the ring. I'm just telling you. Not this crew.
His feet has to be faster than his mouth with that one.
That's exactly right. That is exactly right.
Hey, I want to close at least for me on this. You guys have become kind of the uniform machine this year. I mean, you guys have had all sorts of different combinations of jerseys, and last week even went old school, took a nod back in the day to Coach Thigpen and Coach Bly with all the bold stripes and the helmets and things like that. Is there one that you like better than the others?
Oh, the throwback that we just put on, that's at the top right now. But I want to say last year, one of the best uniforms that we had was the all-Navy. The helmet was chrome with Navy, mm-hmm. and then just all of it put together with the Carolina blue, just a little tad bit of the accessories with the Carolina blue. It kind of set it off.
No. Deonny, no.
All right.
No, you lost me on that one. I was with everything you said so far in this interview. I was buying, but I'm not buying. I'm not buying you guys dressed up like Duke.
Not the all Navy?
No, not the all Navy? Not when you got your arch rival down the road wearing the same color. Now, come on, man. That baby blue is separate. That baby blue is different, man. Ole Miss is running their mouths about, we got the sweetest looking blue. No, you don't. There's only one powder blue. There's only one powder blue. So I'm not going to buy the Navy. But nevertheless, here's what I want to ask you. We do this for every student athlete. Every student athlete that's mm-hmm. ever been on this show. I want to know, during your career at the University of North Carolina, what has been the hardest class that you've had?
The hardest class? Ooh. I'll probably say it had to be a history class. I think I took history. History 128, that was probably the hardest class that I've taken.
Mm, and why is that? What was so hard about it?
We had to do so many papers, and the papers be real long, at least up to 10 pages. I don't know what you could talk about for 10 pages, but that's the hardest that I ever had to do.
That double spacing.
Then when you take the exam, all you have is straight short answer questions.
Oh, boy.
Straight short answer questions.
That's trouble. By the way, who does your hair? Who's in charge of the hair?
I have one of my close friends do my hair, Jalen Murray. She actually plays on the women's basketball team.
Really? Yeah, is that an exclusive mm-hmm. deal with your hair, or does she also do everybody else? So you tell me. I mean, what's the deal on that?
It's exclusive right here.
Oh, that's what I'm talking about. Well, listen, keep up the great work, man. You guys are fun to watch, and obviously the world's going to be watching the next time when you come out there, because it's Notre Dame and North Carolina the day after Thanksgiving, and I know we'll talk about that game a bunch next week, but stay healthy and keep up the good work, man.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Tom Luganville comes up here in about 15 minutes or so. We look forward to that conversation, as we always do. But, Wes, accounting. It's time for the fans to have their fame and fortune.
Sir.
The 15 minutes starts right about now. Again, if you want to participate, you can do it any week you want. You rank them in the ACC, 1 through 15. It's totally your call. You do the eye test. Totally subjective. If you want to get creative with a 16 spot, a sweet 16, you can do that as well. Hashtag Packer and Durham, and you're off to the races. It's as simple as that.
Man on the street question came up last couple days. Thought I'd share it with you here on the air. Question was, if Notre Dame goes back to their independent status next year, what happens to the number 16? I said, well, I look at it like this. It becomes potentially, in Packers' world, the fabulous 15th pick, doesn't it? Is that basically the way you sort it out from here forward, you think?
I don't know. You know, all that stuff is created on the fly. I mean, the Sweet 16 was created off the top of our head during the show. So I don't know the answer to that. It'll just hit you. And again, you know, Notre Dame's got to decide what they want to do. In all likelihood, they will go back to the norm in independence. But you never know, man. The world's crazy right now. Yeah. So who knows how this thing's going to play out. So I don't know the answer to that.
All right. Okay, well, just man on the street question I was asked the other day. Thought I'd ask you here on the show. Inquiring minds have grown accustomed to the 16, just so you know.
I understand that, but even more importantly, we hope to be back here next football season. maybe that's a better question. Forget about what Notre Dame's going to do. Are we still hanging around? Are you still going to say, well, all right, we'll let those two old dudes handle it. Let them do it. Let them handle it. Who knows?
All right.
We'll see.
Thanks. Appreciate that interjection.
Well, here's
I got you. Let's start with Douglas Harris. Douglas, congratulations. You are one of the fan accounting winners of the week.
I see it.
Notre Dame 1, Clemson 2, Miami 3, Carolina 4, NC State 5, Wake 6, BC 7, Virginia Tech 8. Virginia 9, Pittsburgh 10, 11 is Georgia Tech, 12 is Duke, 13 is Louisville, 14 Florida State, 15 Syracuse, 16 is Tigers perfect 10
at
Augusta.
I like it. Sounds familiar. I you said the other day, it looks like the league's kind of knocked into three different tiers. I think that's right. I think that's exactly where we are in the middle of November. Mm-hmm. And you know who the top four are right now. And then you get that whole kind of cluster from 5 to 9, given weekend. One may look better than the other. 9 could be better than 5 next week. Who knows? And then 11 through 15 is 11 through 15. I mean, that's kind of been what it's been for the last couple of weeks. So, yeah, I thought that list was pretty accurate.
Yep. Stephen Willis is next in our accounting. I think Stephen is a repeat winner of the fan accounting, by the way. Notre Dame 1, Clemson 2, Miami 3, Carolina 4. Then we go NC State, Wake Forest, Virginia Tech, Boston College, Virginia, and Pittsburgh. And then Georgia Tech at 11, Louisville 12, Florida State 13, Duke 14, Syracuse 15, and COVID is 16.
Mm.
I'm with you on the COVID there, Coach. Oof. Holy smokes. A couple games last week, already 2 on the shelf in the league this week. Understand what you're saying there for sure.
Yep, COVID, like I said, doesn't care. They don't care if you're ranked, unranked, Power 5, Group of 5, rich, poor, white, black, up, down, doesn't matter. And the ACC has already felt that this week. Wes, as you mentioned, with the Georgia Tech-Miami game on Monday, and then, of course, last night, the announcement regarding the Wake Forest and Duke game. And, you know, again, we're kind of getting late in the game as far as being able to be flexible because the league has done a brilliant job being able to have all the games be played so far. And if there was a disruption, there was at least a place to kind of flip-flop and move and adjust. Wake Forest and Duke, we still, as of this moment, don't know if and when that game will be played. We'll have to wait and see on that front. But, you know, we are running out of weekends if in case we have more disruptions across the board. And, you know, you would have to think that we probably will. And that's not just an ACC thing. We have seen that around the country.
Well, I mean, Mark, the news, this is a non-ACC topic here, but I'll use it going to the bottom since we're talking about the impact of the virus. The news yesterday that New Mexico State is going to move their athletic operations for winter sports to Arizona. They're going to move their men's and women's basketball programs to Arizona so they can play. I mean, that was one that just caught me by surprise. I mean, it shows you, number one, Las Cruces, New Mexico, is close to El Paso, Texas, which, by the way, is in a far worse condition than Las Cruces, New Mexico is. So New Mexico State is taking their basketball programs to Arizona so they can play. I mean, that shows you right there the you know, kind of where things are in other parts of the country, right?
Well, we're 1 week away for what is supposed to be the start of the basketball season. And while we have football in the brain, you got Thanksgiving next week, and again, there's all kinds of stuff. You're trying to stay healthy and safe and take care of others and all that. It is going to be fascinating to watch the basketball world get kickstarted, right? I mean, because we're going to tip off next week. And, you know, Josh Pastner yesterday, I thought, laid it out there perfecto, where he said, hey, listen, you get a one positive test and contact tracing can basically wipe out your team for 2 weeks. Now what? I mean, talk about scheduling headaches and issues and walking that tightrope. Basketball certainly has it. And Jay Billis, I thought, was great on the show yesterday talking about the big picture at the end, and that is at the NCAA men's basketball tournament and the women's tournament have to be played. And you're going to have to figure out a way to get to the finish line. We don't know if we can get to the finish line in football. We hope so. We're all rooting for it.
Yeah.
But you just don't know. But basketball must have a finish line. So we'll see where this goes. In the next couple of weeks, watching football and basketball try to coexist with this COVID clusters all over the place, it's going to be really, really interesting.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Fun guest today, and it continues as we continue our theme of Charlotte, North Carolina today on the show. Everybody, just everybody jumping on it. Even Leonard Hamilton, a little Gastonia, right? He's got on the suburbs.
That's it.
Yeah. Everybody's tied into it today. All right, let's get to Tom Luganville, front and center.
Mean Streets of Weddington.
We got the directional Charlotte suburbs. You got Gastonia, so you got West Charlotte. You got Waxhaw, Weddington. You got South Charlotte.
Yep.
You guys need to get somebody from Lake Norman on after me. You'd be all set.
And we're Marty Smith away from hitting the quadruple fecta. If we had Marty Smith on today from Lake Norman up there in his new Ram truck, we would have it all covered. There's no doubt.
We need somebody from Albemarle so we can get the eastern portion. Charlotte. Then you'd be all set. You have the whole entire thing covered.
Everybody covered. What? That's it. That's it. You've got Louisville and Syracuse, though, covered this week.
Wait, hold on.
Uh-oh, Wes has got something.
Hold on. We always have somebody from Albemarle on the show, Pac.
There we go.
Oh, looky there. Got a nice fat stogie. I like it.
Yeah.
I like it.
There you go.
Well, I tell you.
We always have somebody from Albemarle on the show. There we go.
Shame you didn't get his good looks.
All right, Pac said. Yeah. Thank you. Yes. All right. You've got Syracuse at Louisville on Friday night with Anish Shroff. And Katie's doing sidelines for you, by the way. Coveted invite with you guys on Friday night for the show.
We are blessed.
Yes, you are. What are your principal concerns if you're coaching Louisville or Syracuse? It might already kind of be a fait accompli, but what do you want to see in the last 3-4 ball games of your season?
So we were discussing this as we were trying to kind of map out what we're going to come on air with. And this might be the most simplistic football game recipe in the history of mankind. And it's very simple. All right. Louisville, don't turn the ball over. Syracuse, turn the ball over. Like, or force the turnovers. Here's some trivia for you guys. Do you know who has forced more turnovers in college football than any other team?
Syracuse!
They're +3 in turnover margin and have won one game. +3. They have forced 17 turnovers, all right? Now, keep in mind, no Trill Williams, no Cisco. They got a bunch of young guys in the linebacking core and on the back end, who, by the way, I actually think are pretty good when you watch them. And it just kind of defines what the problem is. They can't move the football, or, you know, they can't block anybody, and they're playing with an inexperienced quarterback that they can only do so much with. But they're giving them the football. So something's got to give. If Louisville continues this trend of handing the ball, by the way, Louisville is -12 in turnover margin. If they continue giving the ball to Syracuse, all right, and Syracuse continues to force it, You got to expect Syracuse is going to have to come up with some points. Some way, somehow, you can't keep floundering around and not taking advantage of these opportunities. So I think that's how you're looking at these final few weeks. And you're also evaluating your young guys because they're all playing. They're all an integral part of whether or not you're going to be able to get a win. And so for both of those teams, and I think there are some young guys at hand that are pretty decent players that are now getting an opportunity.
By the way, Tom, when it comes to Louisville, Hawkins opts out. Curious to get your take on that. And you got Tutu Atwell's kind of nicked up. It's going to, I guess, be a game-time decision one way or the other. There's still a lot of weapons on that team. And, man, Malik Cunningham goes for a .197 rushing. They've always had weapons. But what's your take on all the opt-outs? And maybe it's not surprising. You tell me. You live in this world.
Listen, I'm a bit of a get off my lawn guy when it comes to this opt-out thing. I just cherish the sport of football so much, the team camaraderie, the locker room. I just cannot fathom just walking away. And here's the thing about it is these aren't decisions that have been made prior to the season. These are decisions that were made when things weren't going well. So now all of a sudden it becomes the easy out. That's the thing that I don't like about it. And listen, I think Javian Hawkins is a special player. I think Louisville's got special players across the board on the offensive side of the football, and they've got steady reserves as well. I think Braden Smith's a guy that's coming up and is starting to emerge offensively. I like their tight ends. I actually wish they'd get him involved in the passing game even more, but I'm not a fan of it, guys. And I'm not a fan of it when it truly reflects that when you don't have something to play for, all of a sudden you don't care about the team anymore. And that to me is something that, and I know there's going to be a ton of people that disagree with that, and I get it. Everybody has their own perspective on it. But, man, I think back to those times playing college football, and any of us who have to just walk away, that would be a tough one.
Hey, Luke, here's the other thing, too, and I was asked about this the other day. We know just enough about the next level at times to be dangerous, especially when it comes to the transition process from college to the NFL, right? There are 32 of those teams, and all 32 of them are different in some form or fashion. But there are some teams at the National Football League level that are going to look at guys who opted out of their college season once that season began and then started to go downhill. Some of those teams are not going to look kindly on that. Others, it won't move their radar.
Right.
May not move a needle, so to speak, on their radar. But I would say this. There's some teams that might not be interested in players that are opting out and say, well, I got to go get ready for the draft, and it hadn't gone real well. And, you know, and look, there's a pandemic out there, but sometimes teams go, wait a second, if he'll opt out, even when he's gone through all the things to play, that might not show very well.
You're 100% correct, and all of that varies based on organization. And, you know, the other thing, too, that concerns you is if you start to see it with players that have an overinflated opinion of their value, okay? And I'm not saying that's the case here with Javian Hawkins. I'm saying in totality, we often see that with guys that declare early, and you're sitting there scratching your head going, man, you're going to be a sixth-round draft choice. What are you doing? Who are you listening to?
Right.
You know, those types of guys, and that's concerning too. So what it's going to lead NFL coaches, GMs, and scouts to do is start asking a lot of difficult questions of not just the coaches that they've played for, the athletic trainers, the strength and conditioning guys, every ounce of information that they can get on what type of guy is this. Is he a me guy? Is he a team guy? Is he a worker? Is he not a worker? Does he like the game versus love the game? I think that just leads them to dig deeper because for some people that is going to be a big red flag, and for others it's not.
Tom, what's your take on what Ian Book has delivered here the last two games? I mean, he was fantastic against Clemson. You knew Notre Dame was going to take a shot against BC with all the emotion. They did, and they said, okay, cool, let me dust off. Now it's our turn, and they go take care of business. You know, Book goes for 8,700 yards rushing, 283 passing. They just look like they're getting better and better and better and more confident on the offensive side as this year goes on.
And personally, I don't think it has anything to do with the passing game. It's all his legs. If you look at the difference in this offense, and now some of those plays may result in a throw downfield, but what enabled the throw? It was his ability to get out of trouble, extend the play, be able to get on the perimeter, buy a second or third passing chance. Somebody gets lost downfield in coverage, or you're able to throw a guy open and a 50-50 contested, you know, ball with some of those big tight ends and big weapons outside. That's what stands out to me more than anything. I think that they have, I'm not saying they've told him this, but just, hey, listen, let your instincts do the talking. If you don't feel like there's something that you can stand in there and work through the progression, get out of there and find something on the move. Because the more times that he has been able to get out of the pocket to his right or to his left, the more plays for that offense have been made. So what does that now do to opposing defenses? They're not just worried about defending the run game. Now they've got to account for that guy. You know, and I'm not so sure they always, defenses defending Notre Dame in the first 5-6 weeks of the season always felt that way. Okay, maybe he'll, you know, he'll extend a play here and there. Maybe we get a bootleg naked or something. Now it seems like it's a part of every single series. So now you've got to account for him. And accounting for him changes how you approach defending Notre Dame. And that's the big, the feet of Ian Book have been far more impressive and far more valuable than the arm of Ian Book, in my opinion.
Yeah, interesting point. The other thing, too, is you're starting to see another layer of maybe what Tommy Reese's ultimate plan was, and he just had to kind of get to a point where they had confidence and, I guess, to a degree, comfort with what they were going to try, right?
Oh, absolutely. And think about it. Imagine being Tommy Reese here. Now, obviously, you've got great tutelage with Brian Kelly, and Brian Kelly trusts him. He would not have hired him as an offensive coordinator at that age if he didn't. But working through some of those things for the first time as a coordinator, I think, you know, it's a little bit of trial and error. It's a little bit, okay, what if we try this? If it doesn't work, then what do we do? Then, if you know, how do we counter this to that? And for me, I think, you know, a big part of the shift was getting both of the tight ends on the field at the same time. That's been a big component to all of this. One of the things about Notre Dame, I think Tommy Reese has done a really good job of, is when you can be an 11, one back or one tight end, or 12, one back, two tight end personnel on passing downs, when you don't have to change your personnel and there's always the threat of the run, there's always the threat of the pass, and you don't have to get in four and five wides and become obvious or predictable, that's what makes you really, really dangerous, because you can create so many mismatches. And on defense, they always, to some degree, have to keep their run personnel in the game to be able to match up. You can't necessarily go nickel with two tight ends in the game. I think Tommy Reese and Brian Kelly have done such a good job of formationing and personnel grouping defenses over the last 2 to 3 weeks.
Tom, we see Trevor Lawrence back in college football this weekend. Clemson goes down to Tallahassee. Obviously, on paper, this looks like a complete mismatch. Get all that. But Clemson's now in a chase mode, right? All of a sudden, it is a little bit different. Hey, they've got a loss. Yeah. You can't afford another one. Now you got six teams back. You're taking on a team that, quite frankly, you should handle. If you're Dabo Swinney moving forward, what do you expect to see from Clemson Saturday?
A hungry football team that has spent the last 2 weeks getting back to basics. Just getting back to fundamentals. You know you have superior personnel. You know you're superior at the quarterback position. You also know that you've got some flaws now, and those flaws have been exposed. One of them not being able to defend a mobile quarterback, something that you've got to address, and you're going to see that this week versus Florida State. But I think it's getting back to just doing what we do, not overcomplicating things, it being about us, not the opponent, because if we play to our standard, the opponent's not going to beat us. And that's just the bottom line. And you've heard me say this over and over again. If you're going to beat Clemson, the opponent's got to play their best game, and you got to help them a little bit. I think that happened versus Notre Dame, and I don't think there's any question about that. I thought it happened in the first half versus Boston College, too. So the second thing that's really important is, where's the health of this football team? Are they going to get some of these bodies back? You know, Tyler Davis, Soskowski, some of the guys that they really need, whether it's from a leadership standpoint or a depth and an upgrade and talent standpoint, to get back to full health on defense, I think going to hopefully up their production.
Lugs, we're in the stretch drive here of this regular season. Can we get to the end?
Well, we're running out of reschedule dates, and after a while, you might start looking like the Big Ten and the Pac-12, where everything is a no contest. I hope so. I really do. I mean, it just seems like every week we're all becoming like the coaches, right? What are the coaches doing three times a week and on Friday and Saturday? They're waiting for that text. Waiting for that text. Are we good to go or are we not good to go? And on that, put yourself in their shoes. You prep the entire week with the team that you hopefully believe is going to take the field on Saturday. And without any warning and without any practice time, you might find out on Friday night or Saturday morning that you're down five guys or you're down seven guys. And which seven are they? And that is, that's a daunting thing to have to deal with each and every week. And that just wears on you. So you're doing the best you can. You hope you, I think the fact that we've all gotten this far and some of the adjustments that have had to be made has been really, really impressive. It has been, but I don't think we've seen the end of it yet. And the teams that are going to be the most careful when they're away from their building are the teams that are going to be able to put the best team on the field each and every week.
By the way, you think NC State can help the league and finally beat Liberty? Yeah, because that's going to turn out to be a really good football game, I think, Saturday night.
I think it's going to be a great football game. Obviously, NC State's allowed some points on the board defensively, but you look at this NC State offense, I mean, they're looking at finishing in the top five of most points per game that they've ever had in the history of their program. I think right now they're scoring 33.5 with Bailey Hockman three times. They've scored an average of 38 points. So losing Devin Leary, I think we all looked at it and said, man, they were getting in a rhythm. That could just be a crushing blow. And everybody has stepped up. They're making spectacular catches with their skill, running the football well, offensive line's playing their tail off, and Bailey Hockman has been a steadying force. This is my upset pick this week. I really think that this is a game that NC State's got an opportunity to win. And listen, all the pressure's on Liberty, right? Liberty's the undefeated team. They're the college football darling right now of the group of five that's, you know, not considered to be in the discussion with Cincinnati or, you know, or BYU or, you know, SMU and some of those teams. So I like this matchup. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Luke, I'll say this, and we've mentioned it a couple times. I think NC State is one of those teams that at the end of last year, we weren't real sure, right? And they started off, they had to come back to beat Wake in the opening weekend. Then they got beat by three scores at Virginia Tech. I don't know how 2020 is going to end for the Wolfpack, but I'll take you back to that Pittsburgh game and the fact that Devin Leary was able to take him the length of the field in 143 to win it. I don't know if it saved the season, but it certainly gave you an indicator they were going to be a different team. How many teams do you know shuffle their offensive line the way they have and now have had to go back to a quarterback that they moved out, you know, in game two at the end, and they're still kind of ascending a little bit? If I'm an NC State fan, I am very pleased with the way Dave Doran has handled this 2020 campaign, given everything that's happened on and off the field, just trying to get this season in.
Well, I'll tell you, it couldn't have gone anywhere but up. And I had them at the end of last year when they were just a mass unit. They could barely practice. I mean, it was almost as if COVID hit them last year. And they're trying to figure out how to field a competitive football team. I think the other thing, too, is when he decided to hire Tim Beck and go a different direction philosophically from a terminology perspective and all of those sorts of things, without having spring football, they've done a remarkable job in terms of buy-in. Their players are learners. Their players really bought into this new approach, and you're seeing the results. And they did it rather quickly. So I think they've got kids that the game is important to them. They were embarrassed a year ago. Their personnel and their players were more talented than the production showed. And now you're starting to see that evolve a little bit. And they've become a fun team to watch. I have tremendous respect for NC State because when you go through all of the things that they've gone through as a program, whether it's losing guys to the National Football League, whether it's having the injury-riddled season they had a year ago, and even some of the things now, this team is really resilient. They find a way to bounce back, and I think that's a tribute to the coaching staff and player development.
Tom, last question from me. Yesterday we're doing conference cuts, and Pat Narduzzi got to the podium and started mentioning 6- and 7-star recruits, and we were like, we don't keep up with it. So we figured we'd ask you, and we brought you on. Are you aware of a new grading system in which high school players are actual 6- and 7-stars? And if so, could you give us just a couple names?
I am not aware, and I could not tell you what Pat's talking about, but I did get a chuckle out of it because I heard it too. And listen, I'm one of those people that doesn't believe there are as many 5-star recruits out there as everybody seems to think there are, because if there were, there'd be 30 true freshmen every year dominating college football. And you know what? There's not. There's a handful of them. So for me, you know, from Pat Narduzzi's standpoint, just keep recruiting and developing the players you're recruiting, because it seems to be boring out pretty well for you. And by the way, in that matchup, we've got Pitt versus Sybil.
Yeah.
And I don't know what to make of Virginia Tech. Did you know that these two teams are a combined 6 points away from being 6-2? Not one of the teams combined 6 points. Both of them together are a combined 6 points away from being 6-2.
Yeah, it's impossible to figure out what you're going to get. And I just hope we get the game.
I just hope we get the game.
Too. I mean, that's going to be a good one.
I hope I get my game on Friday.
Yeah.
I get worried with the short week thing, because now you're sitting there. I mean, holy smokes.
Yeah.
Yep. No doubt. Be safe.
By the way, yeah, Tom, real quick, just so you know,
yeah.
Pack, I think we need to promote this even a week in advance, don't you? Next Wednesday, when Luganbill joins us on a Wednesday, prior to the holiday, we get Tom Luganbill's very special ACC basketball predictions.
Oh, I'm already working on it now, boys. I've got a crack team in the back over here that is punching the abacus. Doing the numbers, boys.
There is nothing. I want to say, in the history of Packer and Durham, television or ACC Central on radio, there is nothing, not one thing, that beats Tom Luganbill in basketball, just so you
there,
know.
Let me just tell you something right now. There is just a so high likelihood know. I could put teams in there that aren't even in the ACC.
I will tell you this. Know.
That's exactly what I'm looking for.
I'm sensing there will be a basketball breakdown of the ACC from Lugs about the same time you see me actually working behind the counter at Taco Bell. I'm sensing those will be pretty similar.
Yeah.
Hey, first of all, I'm taking time off from Taco Bell to make this list.
I figured as much.
Okay, good. Yeah.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
2019 ACC Men's Soccer Championship continues tonight. Semifinals, if you will. Virginia and Clemson at 6 o'clock over in Chapel Hill. And then at 8 p.m. tonight, you'll get Notre Dame and Pittsburgh in Raleigh. Both matches right here on ACC Network tonight, and look forward to showing you that. Pitt was the lone higher seed, by the way, to survive in the quarterfinals. The latest United Soccer coaches poll is out in the women's side. And, Pac, here's just the flex. Let's just throw it up on the board, shall we? I mean, look at this. Come on, man. 5 in the top 10? You've been telling people.
Well, men and women. When you look at the national rankings, you almost think you're looking at the ACC standings. That's how dominant both the men and the women have been in soccer. The semifinals you're going to get tonight from the men's side, great. We've talked about Florida State, one knocking off two or two knocking off one based on whatever poll you want to look at. The league is spectacular. Not good, spectacular when it comes to soccer, men and women.
Tremendous show today. Thanks to Tom Luganbill, Dayami Brown, Leonard Hamilton, Ike Ekwonu was fantastic with the pancakes for you.
Excellent.
Tune into Packer and Durham weekday mornings from 7 to 10 Eastern for the best conversations about everything from the ACC. Find it on the ACC Network, SiriusXM Channel 371, and streaming on the ESPN app.